Hey guys, welcome to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't pretend we're okay. We tell the truth about what it actually took to get here. Because the truth is, a lot of people look fine on the outside while carrying things they've never actually dealt with. Pain, trauma, addiction, patterns that keep repeating. And at some point, you either face it or it's going to catch up to you. And healing, it's not pretty, it's not quick, and it's definitely not a linear surface level experience. But one thing I know about God, he doesn't leave you in broken places. He calls you out of them. So today I'm having a real conversation about what it actually takes to rebuild your life. Today's guest is Katie Baker. She is a writer, a trauma survivor who's walked through addiction, deep personal healing, and rebuilding her life from the ground up. Katie, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat. I launch everybody from this incredible question. Give us your elevator pitch. Who are you? What do? And what makes you special, darling?
Yeah, so well, Katie Baker, I live in Idaho and wrote a book. I just found myself really lost at the age of 47. Was drinking, suffering from alcohol and many other t forms of addiction. And I found myself through the use of therapeutic psychedelics, and I decided to write a memoir to capture my experience so that I could help other people because I believe in hope.
Yeah, no, I love that. And we're going to align on some of this, I can already tell. You said you looked fine, Katie, for years, but like, what is happening underneath everything?
Well, I was pretty numb. It felt as if everything emotionally was disconnected. So I was going through the motions that would tell somebody from their perceptions from outside that I was doing just fine. I was successful in my work and raising my kids and everything in the home and, blah, 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 but was very much disconnected. I was in the process of doing and not being.
Okay. What is there something like what actually caught up to you? You said it was like your late 40s. What caught up to you? Is it like an event, an experience, or just you knew you were at rock bottom? Like, where were you?
Yeah, so it was a culmination of things. Basically, I was just using a lot of whatever I could get my hands on to numb. So that included work, that included alcohol, nicotine, whatever, food. I was just grasping. So anytime I would sit down by myself at the end of the night, I needed a beer in my hand because that was the time where it was a reflection period. When I was 47, we were at a family reunion. My family, I come from a big line of alcoholics, basically drinkers and loggers, I say in the book. But my son, who was 18 years old at the time, so my two kids were leaving the nest. They were going off to school. And my son sat down next to me in a lawn chair. I'd had multiple beers at that
Yeah.
point because it was in the evening. And he just said, "Look, Mom, I don't know how you survived the childhood you did, and I can tell that you are really struggling. And you've done a phenomenal job raising us, and I think you should take a year and just heal yourself, and we've got your back now."
Wow. That's a wake-up call. That is definitely a wake-up call. How did he recognize that trauma in you? Is that something you guys had the conversation about, like you were open about your childhood, or is it just something they saw the pattern?
Yeah, it was definitely something where when they were at the right age, I started to tell them kind of about my childhood and what I had experienced because I had sexual, physical, verbal abuse, sort of seen drug addiction, sort of all the things at a very early age. What happened when I had my kiddos is I decided that I'm in a form of active resistance. Like they are not going to have my childhood. They will not have it. So it was almost as used as a cautionary tale, like the boogeyman tale. Like, be careful if you ever feel uncomfortable at someone's home, you call me. Here's a safe word. Like it was just excessive because I was so protective of them and their childhood experiences. But yeah, and then, I think my son just saw, like, I was I was drinking too much, I was eating too much, I was working too much, and I wasn't really present. And I think when they were actually leaving, I was like lost. I was like, who am I without this role too? I'm losing the mother role is what it felt like at the time.
No, it does feel like that. I still have four at home, but two left. And I felt that in that moment, it just changes who you are in that existence. Like, I don't stop being mom, but mom looks very different. And
Yeah.
that's a whole shift to go through. What's the hardest truth that you really had to face about yourself?
I immediately what came to mind was that I did not believe I was a good person. I just had zero self-worth. Really just was kind of down in the bottom of the barrel. And I think that I had held so tightly onto that shame. And I think as we become adults and we come from childhood abuse, we often are become our own abusers and our own perpetrators. And I had done a really good job. My inner critic was loud and blasting, like, you know, yeah, so it was just really challenging. And that was the one thing that I was doing all the right things. I volunteered, I mean, for crying out loud, like help neighbors, like, but I still could not receive a kind word. Just it fell flat when it just landed like on the street in front of us when anyone said anything. And so it was a realization that, you know, how can I flip that script? Because I am not what happened to me.
What does healing actually look like for you in this experience?
Yeah. So I think that it was a long road. Initially, I used therapeutic psychedelics because I had tried talk therapy and done a whole bunch of
Are
different,
we talking like psilocybin?
psilocybin, MDMA, and ayahuasca.
Okay.
Yeah. I did this with trained facilitators, but I knew like I kind of had tried everything and it hadn't worked. I think because I was in such a state of denial, I was always taught, you're strong, you're tough, we move on, we don't talk about this stuff. And it didn't work. And so initially it was like with the use of therapeutic psychedelics, it helped me sort of be able to view my life in a totally different way than I was unable to with the tools that I had available. And so it at the time I really didn't let many people know because I was very involved in the community that I had been doing therapeutic psychedelics. I was afraid of judgment. Like, what would people think? You know? But it was tough. I'm not gonna lie. When you're doing it right, it's like you have to basically analyze your life and rethink everything you know to be true. And it is tough and it's also beautiful.
When you say like how did that experience work for you? 'Cause I actually discovered microdosing psilocybin. And that changed my life. I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago, I cycled through. In fact, still sometimes, like if I really am feeling like I'm just kind of losing myself, I take that. But there was never, like, I never felt anything, right? Like, I never have done the trip or anything. Like, I couldn't even tell you were taking it really. The only thing I would feel a little different is like I feel like a warm hug, kind of. And then, like, everything's brighter, everything's clearer. The cloud in my head is gone, the heaviness in me is gone. Like, it was very transformative, but very mild. So your experience, I mean, are you like actually in the medical setting where they have you in a room and they're giving you high doses? What are you doing in this?
Yeah, I wasn't in a medical setting. I've actually never done that type of setting. I
Okay.
opted to go to like South America to do ayahuasca.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was like, you know,
So a
it felt
shaman, like
like
you're
a
in that, you're out in nature and you're doing that.
There's benefits to both. I'm now a licensed facilitator and can I'm getting my license in Oregon and Colorado. But I think that it is a different experience, but there's value to both in terms of both models. However, for me, I wanted to get to the closest thing to how they did it in the past, how they used psychedelics in the past. And so it was a full dose. You sit with a shaman. There's other people in the room. Ayahuasca in particular is a very internal process. I think some people are a little put off because it's known to be a purgative, so you purge. And what the thought is behind the purging is really just you're releasing and letting go. So, like for example, if you vomit, for me in particular, I learned like just ask, what am I releasing? And it could be worry or self-hatred or whatever the long list of maladies that unfortunately we can struggle with.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, how long does that last? Like, is it just a couple of hours and you feel, what do you feel after that experience?
Yeah, I think it's, well, it can range, but it depends. They typically offer 3 cups. You can just do one and maybe 3.5, 4 hours, or it can be, all night. It just depends on how many cups each participant decides to drink. I typically went with like one or two. But yeah, it's what you feel after is very raw and vulnerable. It would not be, I wasn't a big crier at all. I would cry for like if I saw something really touching, that would make me cry, but I never really cried for myself. The first time I did ayahuasca, as I noted in my book, is I cried for like 10 hours. I
Wow.
couldn't quit crying. It wasn't like an active cry, but
Yeah,
tears were just
tears is a
streaming
thing.
down my face. So that's another form of purging. And obviously there was a reason, that I had kept that inside for all those years.
Right. And what, like, a couple days after, what are you feeling? I mean, was there a message that came through to you, or, what is it like in the couple days after?
Yeah, and I think that it's really important that I made sure to take a little time for myself and just come back to planet Earth. It can feel like you're just shot out and kind of the self-analysis and looking at your life. And at the time, I didn't believe in really anything related to spirit or spirit guides or anything like that. There's a reason behind that, but I won't get into that. But needless to say, all of a sudden you see what you perceive to be spirit guides or angels or people that have passed over. So that can come. But I think afterwards, it's this integration. They say that the actual medicine journey is 10% of the work. It's a 90% when you get home. So it's so critical to actually take the time to integrate. Otherwise, you've purged and done all that work, and gone to, non-ordinary states, and then you don't do anything with it, which is just a shame. I think that these medicines in particular are really teachers, especially when they come from the earth. And I think it's really critical to actually go, okay, what did I write it down? Right? Because you'll often forget too. So it's important to really write it down and process it and go, what do I think this is about? And how can I change maybe this that's not serving me any longer?
Yeah. So you think, so doing the work when you come out of that experience is like just the mindfulness of writing down your thoughts, processing them, or is there actually framework, that you have like a guide, like a, set plan on how can I integrate this back?
Yeah, I think for each person it's a little different. For me, I added an integration coach or a therapist so that when I got back from a ceremony, I would go in and just it was like a counseling session, but very much focused on the experience, the psychedelic experience. So that worked really well for me. It's also really important, I think, to have supportive people around you that can help you process, because these medicines do change lives. I mean, it's just the research is there. And so you can only imagine that with that change, it takes like a lot of support.
Yeah. How did your kids handle that? They were able to show through, hold space for you while they're simultaneously going out building their lives. How were they able to, help you integrate this process?
My family was huge in supporting me. I was really fortunate because, my husband, who had no interest in doing psychedelics, was like, I totally trust your judgment. My kids listened to me, and we were on the phone, and my daughter was, one of my editors for the book.
Nice.
My son would listen to me as I read stories aloud so that, he could give feedback. And also just they were like my son had said, like, we got your back, and they were there with me through this entire process. And I think, throughout this process, they've gotten the mother that they really deserve, the one that's
Yeah.
present and there for them and supportive in a different way. Like, I always volunteered and did all the things, made the lunches, above and beyond, but it's a different type of presence.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that, and I think that's something the audience can understand as well. What is something, Katie, about trauma that people just completely misunderstand?
Yeah, that I think for me in particular, when you're a trauma survivor, the impact is just detrimental. It's like scars that no one sees within the body and just within the psyche. And I think that as we try to navigate this world, and we hold those and they define who we are. They just sort of poke holes in our aura, and we walk around with that our entire lives until hopefully we get someone to shake us or help us or hold us or, some medicines, whatever it takes to help. But for me, I was highly functioning, a highly functioning trauma survivor. So my wounds showed up as, I want to build a great nonprofit. I want to be the best parent I can be. I can perfect, 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 which, doesn't exist. So it's like that bunny that we're chasing at the racetrack, and we find out that it's not real. It just doesn't exist. So, and I thought through my experience in particular that seeking perfection would get me away from those previous wounds that. So it shows up in, like, so I have a lot of empathy for people with addiction, because oftentimes if you look at those core wounds, it just can infect everything.
You talk about breaking cycles, and I mean, as a parent, that's what you did, right? Even in your mess, you were still making sure that they didn't go through your same experience. So that's a cycle broken. What does it actually look like now for you with breaking cycles, and what does it actually take to do this?
It's interesting work. I, in particular, a lot of people in these type of ceremonies feel like some of the work includes healing our ancestral wounds. I myself am under the belief that it is just enough to heal this one individual in this lifetime. And so I write a chapter in the book. It was called Tough Broads and Rainier Beer, where I actually took my mom. So I came from a long line of tough women. And I took my mom to a ceremony about a year into the healing. And it was MDMA and psilocybin. And we had like the most beautiful conversation where I, spilled everything that I had been feeling because we didn't talk about it. And she just held me and said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that that happened to you, that I wasn't there for you, that I didn't protect you. All the things I had wanted to hear. So it was really interesting because my mom, in particular, she wasn't really there for me as a child. I kind of raised myself and sometimes raised her, but I think that as adults, it's like really beautiful to see a woman in her 70s. Who I read that chapter to with like snot and tears coming down because it was such a tough chapter, right? And after I was finished, I was like, okay, should we put this out in the world? And she said, yes, it's time to tell her story. It still makes me emotional. But, it's really impactful to not only take myself and do this work, but take my mom alongside. And it has had just phenomenal impact on the lives of my children, because my mom quit drinking. And, 6 months ago, she said, I finally feel free. And I think it's because you just put the book out there. We didn't hide from our shit,
And that's I feel like, that's part of like the core of this show is that I want people to understand that their story matters, and it's the messy, messy stuff that they're hiding. They're hiding from it. They're sitting on it. They're in the shame loop, in that spiral. And I just think it's incredible because when people like you, Katie, are willing to come out here and be vulnerable, that makes an impact. And it's not even a place like, you know, why do you think so many people, because there are so many people that have stories like yours, but they're not taking the step to heal. What would you say to them to take that next step? They just think it's too late. What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, number one, I'm 51 now, and it's never too late. It's never too late in so many regards. Like, my mom's in her 70s. It's never too late to find peace. Like, and we are worthy of that peace. And we forget that we are worthy. I also think that when we heal the individual, you know, we think about when there's a toxic individual and those roots spread and they impact the house and the village, and you know, it just spreads out. But what if we could heal the one individual and we put out that goodness out into the world? That's what we need right now. And we also need the really real. We need people to be real and not just say, I'm doing great. I'm doing so, you know, I'm doing okay or whatever, when they're really not. Because I think what we have been doing in our society is not working. And that is called brushing things under the rug and pretending that they don't exist and burying it out back. That's the American way, I feel like. And probably maybe all over the world, but it's not working. And we can see that. So we can kind of see the breakdown happening. And I think that the only power that sometimes it feels like we have is to heal the individual.
I love that. Where can people find your book or follow you, get resource with you?
Yeah, so my book's on Amazon, and I also did the audiobook, so I read that myself. It's called When the Universe Holds Your Hair Back, and that's on Amazon, Audible, Spotify, and then my website is peaceandfirehealing.com.
I love that. Katie, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what I think makes you special. And it's not just that you went through the hard things, it's that you faced them. And exactly like you said, you guys are not hiding from your shit. Like, you faced it. You stopped pretending. You stopped running. You did the work. And not even just relying on, you know, the psychedelic experience. You came back and you made it a point to integrate that. Not just doing that, but you turned around and now you're helping other people to actually do the work, to find the part of them that knows they're worthy, to remind them of who they are. And I think, you know, that work is something most people avoid their whole lives. And you chose to look at what hurt and you rebuilt from that. I think it's incredibly beautiful. I think it takes courage. I think it takes honesty. And I think it makes you incredibly special. To everyone listening, you guys, healing is real, but it's not easy and it's not quick and it doesn't come from avoiding the truth. At some point, you really do have to face what's been running your life. You know, God did not create you to stay stuck in the cycles. He calls you into freedom, into clarity, into something better than survival. So you have to get radically honest with yourself. And please remember that your mess is your message. Even the trauma, even the addiction, even the parts of your life that you wish never happened, that's where your voice is built. And if this episode speaks to you, please help share it out. Okay, there's someone that needs to hear Katie's message that you have access to that we never would. So please share this with them so they can get the book, they can get resourced on what it is to remember who they are again. Make sure you leave a review. Stars are cute, but written words gets us up in that algorithm. And if you guys are ready for the hot seat, please come tell me why you're special. Katie, your story is amazing. I think the healing you've done is beautiful. And it's just, again, not even the healing. It's that you're out here sharing your message and your story in the light so other people can find their way too.
Thank you so much.